Good evening. Do you have Proverbs 31 open in front of you? And if you have the handout, you may find it helpful to have that open in front of you this evening as well, particularly for the early part of the sermon. I can imagine a number of responses as you heard Proverbs 31 read. Maybe if you're a woman, you're thinking no one can live up to that, particularly those verses about a noble wife. Maybe you think, every time I hear it, I think what a failure I am. Now, how can anyone be that kind of wife? Or you're thinking, well, I'm not a wife, but I could never be that. Maybe you're a husband thinking, my wife is nothing like that, or you're thinking, my wife is that, praise God. Maybe as a guy, you're thinking, well, this sermon has nothing to do with me. And if you're a single guy, you're thinking, this definitely has nothing to do with me. And I want to firstly say, look, this is a sermon for all, but primarily it is aimed not at women, not at wives, but at young men. The book of Proverbs is a book primarily addressed to a young man from his father. And throughout, we've seen that the father addressing the son. In fact, the word son is used 44 times in the book, and the word daughter not once. The book of Proverbs is a book for young men. It's addressed primarily to them, whilst having wider application to all. So it's warned young men about being led astray by adulterous women and keeping foolish women away and staying away from quarrelsome women. But don't stay away from the wise woman. And here in chapter 31, we have King Lemuel's mother addressing her son. You see that in verse 1. And she teaches him three timeless truths. Verses 4 to 5, she teaches him to keep his head clear and sober so as to rule righteously. Verses 6 to 9, she's taught him to let mercy and justice uphold his throne, to be the voice of the voiceless. And in verse 3, she's commanded him not to give his strength to women, i.e. don't be like Solomon, who loved many foreign women, and which in turn divided his kingdom. Don't give your strength to women, but rather give your strength to a woman, an excellent wife. And she then details this, what it should look like for an excellent wife in verses 10 to 31. So firstly then, the godly wife. And a few helpful technical things for us just to see. Firstly, 10 to 31, it is written as an acrostic poem. That is, each verse begins with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. So it starts at Aleph in verse 10, and then Beth, verse 12, and etc. And secondly, and more significantly, this poem's a chiasm. Now, a chiasm is a structural device in which the main point of the poem is highlighted by its separateness, it's alone, it has no parallel, and by its central placement found in the middle of the poem. A writer, O'Donnell's, helpfully lays it out like this, and his book has helped me hugely in understanding this chapter. So let me show you. It should come up on your screens now. If you have the handout, you'll see that as well. So if we could have that chiastic structure up, please, Sam, that'd be helpful. There it is. And you can see how the poet takes several themes and starts from both ends and works his way to the center. So if we begin with the outside, the themes in the first and the last lines are identical. So A, the top, the high value of an excellent wife, and A1 at the bottom, the high value of an excellent wife. Kind of the start and the end of the poem. And as we continue to move from the outside inward, we see how the themes of an earlier section parallel a later section. So B parallels B1 and etc. And the narrowing in on the main theme takes us to the center, the poetic and practical point of the passage. And what is the central point? Well, verse 23, or G as it on the diagram. Her husband is respected at the city gate. where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. And although the whole poem talks about the wife, verse 23 is not a digression. It's the main point. Because while she is running to and fro, busy about all her work, what's he doing? Sitting. He sits at the city gate. She's working her hand to the bone, planting, buying, selling, weaving, sewing. He sits, but that's the point. She might be the main character, but he is the author's audience. This woman who is described in every verse but one is the kind of wife a young man needs. See, verse 23, he's respected by the most important leaders of the city, the elders. This husband is successful, able to leave, brings justice to the land, sits in a position of rule and judgment over the affairs of the city because he has an excellent wife. Fits the old adage, behind every great man is a great woman. This man sitting is very much related to his wife's serving. And the mother is saying, look, you want to be like this, son? Well, then you need an excellent wife. Now, although the young men are the primary audience, these verses, as we'll see, have much to say to us. So what are the marks of an excellent wife? What should a young man be looking for? We're going to work our way through the poem. And the first thing we see is that she should be a woman of character. Verses 10 to 12 and 30 to 31. Verse 10, we're told she's a wife of noble character. Noble means kind of valiant, vigor, strength, worth. And we're told such a wife is rare. Verse 10, who can find such a wife? It's a hard thing to find a godly wife of character who is worth far more than rubies. She's precious, expensive, valuable. Verse 30, the parallel verses, we see this wife of character fears the Lord. This is where her true beauty is. Charm is deceptive, beauty fleeting. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. She's honored, verse 31, for the way she lives, for who she is. She loves God and lives by God's wisdom. And she's recognized by all for that. She's honored and praised at the city gate. So when one finds such a woman who loves God and whose character reflects that, that's a precious, beautiful thing. So often young men get hooked by outer beauty. And the mother says to her son, look at the inner beauty. Does she fear the Lord? Does she love him? Is it seen in how she lives? But her character is also trustworthy. So verses 11 to 12. Verse 11, her husband has full confidence in her in every area of life. So he trusts in her good sense, her fidelity, her labor. But verse 12, he not only trusts her, she enriches his life. She brings him good through her, as we'll see, industrious labors, her kindness, her servant nature. It's kind of Genesis 1 and 2 language. She's a suitable helper. She is of much help to him. She brings him good, not harm. Now, remember in all this description, we mustn't think that a good wife must be perfectly good. This is an idealized portrait in which all the blemishes have been kind of intentionally and artistically left out. So we don't see any of her flaws. What we see, though, is that she is good to him. Not perfectly good, but consistently good. And 28, 29, the parallels, as it were, we see the husband praises her for it. Verse 29, he recognizes all the good, all the help, all the comfort, blessing, support that she brings. So he can declare, many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. And her children praise her for it, verse 28. They call her blessed. They see all her endeavors and the good, not only that it brings the husband, her dad, but them as she creates this safe, secure household, providing all that they need. So firstly, her character is that of godliness. It's trustworthy. It enriches her husband and her children. It's precious. But the second key excellence, mark of excellence, is she's industrious. So verses 13 to 19 and verse 27. And much of the poem highlights her works. Now, this is probably not something a young man thinks of when he's thinking of a wife. He doesn't sit there and think, and in conversations I've heard of young men talking, they're not talking about the industriousness of young women, you know, how hard they work and how hard they labor. And yet, verses 13 to 19 describe this significant aspect of a godly woman. Look at all the doing words, the verbs in these verses. She selects, she works, she brings, she gets up, she provides, she considers, she buys, she plants, she works vigorously, she trades, she holds the distaff, she grasps the spindle, she makes linen garments, she supplies merchants. Now, much of this is describing work in a busy household in those days. But what is being highlighted is her industriousness that brings provision and care to her family, verse 15. Verse 17, she sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. I mean, she's a wealthy woman. She has servants, and yet it's not beyond her to work. She plants the vineyard, verse 16. Her hands hold the distaff and grasp the spindle to make wool, verse 19. She labors hard for her family, for her husband. Verse 27, we read, she watches over the affairs of her household. She doesn't eat the bread of idleness. A godly wife is industrious. She's not lazy. Now, does that mean today a woman must be in the kind of workplace, otherwise she's not industrious? Well, no, not necessarily. Might be needed, but it's not the case. And at the same time, nor is it the stereotype that a woman who stays at home is a woman of leisure. See, a godly woman, a godly wife, Proverbs says, will seek to be industrious, not lazy, that they'll serve their families in numerous ways. That's the picture. The wife of Proverbs 31 did much of what she did for her family. All her business dealings, her works were for the benefit and to provide for the household. And it freed her husband to lead the city. But she also labors for others. That's the next marker of excellence. She's other-centered. She's kind. So verse 20, she opens her arms to the poor. She extends her hands to the needy. Verse 26 says she speaks with wisdom, and the ESV helpfully translates it literally, the teaching of kindness is on her lips. Her labors are not just for herself or her family, but for others. She acts towards them with kindness. It was a National Kindness Day on Friday, wasn't it? We were all called to be kind. Proverbs 31, woman, wife, is a woman of kindness always, not just for a day. See verse 15, she gives portions of food to her female servants. In verse 21 to 22 and 24 to 25, we see her, she clothes her household, she clothes herself, and she clothes others. She's other-centered. She serves others. She's kind. And lastly, a godly, excellent wife is fearless. See verse 21 and 25? She's fearless both for the present troubles and future. So verse 21a, so when it snows, she has no fear for her household because she's labored and worked hard and she's clothed them all. She doesn't fear the future, verse 25. She can laugh at the days to come because she's labored hard for her family. She's ensured they're provided for and cared for, and because she's trusting the Lord, she fears Him. So she has nothing to fear. See, what does a young man look for to be able to be that kind of man, that husband in verse 23, who is respected and is free to lead the city in justice and hope? A woman who fears the Lord, who has this godly reputation, who is of noble character, who is industrious, who's other-centered, who's fearless, who is kind, and as such is praised by all. Striking, there's no mention of physical or beauty. Often when what young guys value is the one thing they value in a wife. And yet it's not that physical attraction has nothing to do with love. Of course, young men, husbands, are to be physically attracted to their wives. And the book of Song of Solomon extols the physical beauty of a woman and highlighted with vivid descriptions the attractiveness of her body. But here, the mother is warning, highlighted by those final verses, verse 30 to 31, to select a wife based on these characteristics alone is a foolish decision. Charm is so often deceitful. Beauty is always fleeting. The beauty of youth will fade. But a woman who fears the Lord has temporary and eternal value. Her husband will reap benefits from her in this life and the next. As one writer puts it, don't be like Samson, who let his eyes be his demise, falling for the beautiful women who led him astray. Rather be like Boaz. He was kind, gracious, and intrigued by Ruth, a poor young widow, because of what he had heard about her. What he had heard about all that she had done for her mother-in-law. Boaz selected his wife by his ear rather than his eyes. So what should a young man look for? A godly wife of noble character, trustworthy, enriching, industrious, kind, other-centered, fearless. And if those things are in place, well, then you have the main components for a healthy marriage. Getting married is like a bit of like a kit car model. You have all the parts, and then together as a couple, you then build it together. If you have good parts, then you build a great car. Same with a marriage. If you start with the good parts, the good components, then you'll have a great marriage. And King Lemuel's mother says the great parts that you look for, as it were, are godliness, trustworthiness, industrious, kind, fearless. So young men, are you looking for those things in marriage partners? Husbands, are you extolling and celebrating those things in your wives? Wives, are you striving to work hard at those kind of areas of life? Young women, looking for husbands, are you demonstrating those marks? Are they the things you're prioritizing? But actually, how else does Proverbs 31 encourage a wife? Well, secondly, those who serve are esteemed. Those who serve are esteemed. See, the world's view of womanhood at the moment is kind of a quality plus. So for a woman to be successful, esteemed, she must be independent, strong, feminine, beautiful, stunning figure, always nicely presented, tanned, powerful, financially savvy, able to juggle high-powered jobs, lead a FTSE 100 company, be an awesome wife and mother, manage a household. And yet what's striking in Proverbs 31 is what is ultimately being prized and valued, esteemed, is servanthood. See, women are not praiseworthy simply by holding a powerful position and making lots of money or being famous or being able to juggle many plates all successfully. She's praised because she's a servant of all, her husband, her children, her city, the poor. And she's praised and honored and well spoken of because she has sacrificed and submitted self and self-glory. And the Bible teaches both women and men were not created for self-fulfillment, but were to deny ourselves. It's what Jesus says, isn't it, often in the Gospels, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up the cross and follow me. The way of the believer, any believer, is that of self-denial and sacrifice and servanthood like Jesus. And often the struggle for many women, particularly wives, with this is that we see that the endless tasks of managing a household and serving our families and cooking and cleaning and changing nappies and caring and teaching and disciplining and discipling and work is kind of in vain at times and futile and meaningless and boring. Because often they're not what the world esteems and prizes and values. It classes these things as demeaning, as less than. But Proverbs 31:30 says, beauty is vain and fleeting, what the world treasures is in vain. But servanthood, serving others, is not fleeting or frivolous, but praiseworthy, God-honoring, Christ-like. Now, when the Bible pictures servanthood, it's not picturing a kind of a Victorian servant, a skivvy at the beck and call and demand of her husband or children. You know, only speaking when spoken to with no opinion or value or worth, just a servant, a slave. If that's a picture of your marriage, it's wrong. It's abusive. And let me encourage you to seek help. Speak to me or an elder. We'd happily seek to help you in that. See, the wife of Proverbs 31 is valued. She's treasured, esteemed, honored, trusted by her husband, not abused or mistreated as a slave. And when the Bible pictures servant, it thinks Jesus. See, to be a godly woman of character, industrious, other-centered, kind, is to be like Christ. All the characteristics of this excellent wife can be seen in Jesus, the perfect servant, the one who truly feared God, who has the perfect character, utterly trustworthy, who always does good and not harm for all who love him. He's the one who is truly industrious. He does all that his father asked him to. He's the one who is truly other-centered and sacrificial. He denied himself even to death, death on a cross. He's the one who is kind to all, even to his enemies, praying for them as he hung upon the cross. Picture of the wife is a picture of the servant. It's to be like Jesus. The world thinks this is less than. The Bible says it's to be like Christ. And he is our help to be able to live in this way. Because servanthood for all, both men and women, goes against our natural sinful selves. And so we need help. And Hebrews 4 tells us it comes from him who gives us the grace and the help we need to live in this way. And so as a wife seeks to serve with a servant heart, one begins to reflect, not perfectly, the Proverbs 31 wife. You see, to live this way, serving and denying oneself, is to fear the Lord. It's to live according to his wisdom. It's to be Christ-like as he calls us to. And so one's character begins to be shaped by him and his priorities. As such, one seeks to want to do good for husbands and children and families and others. And a wife wants to be industrious, not lazy, but wanting to serve. Serving Jesus, serving the family, serving others, the poor, the city. And as one serves, naturally one is beginning to be other-centered and kindness will prevail. And by living this way, one will be fearless because one trusts and hopes in the Lord and not ourselves. And families will begin to flourish as suddenly you step out in faith. See, Proverbs 31 does not seem so idealized in those terms. It's just the ordinary Christian life. A life that might not bring praise by the world, but it ought to come from your husband. Husband of Proverbs 31 praises his wife, esteems, values, honors, delights in her, trusts her completely. And husbands, we often don't praise our wives enough. I know I don't. So let's make effort to esteem and praise them. But it will definitely come from Jesus as we come before him and hear those words, well done, my good and faithful servant. It's just the ordinary Christian life. To serve and to be sacrificial. Those who humble themselves are exalted. Those who exalt themselves are humbled. Proverbs 31 is a picture of servanthood, kind of viewed from a wife's perspective. But a husband is equally called to serve, to have a servant heart, to deny himself, just in a different way. Ephesians 5 speaks of servant leadership, to lay down our lives for our wives and for our families as we follow our servant king. See, Proverbs 31 is not ultimately extraordinary. It's the ordinary Christian life. We're all called to live sacrificially and to deny ourselves. And with Jesus' help, It is possible. This is the life that Jesus esteems. This is the life that Jesus counts worthy. This is the life that Jesus calls us to. And he calls his church to. See, thirdly and lastly, Proverbs 31 is a picture of Christ's bride. See, if Proverbs 31 describes an excellent wife, it must begin to describe Christ's bride, the church, and how we're to be as his church and his bride. We're to be those who have noble characters, who fear the Lord, whose character is trustworthy, seeking to do good for our husband, the Lord Jesus, as he sits amongst the elders, ruling with justice. And so by how we live, we're to bring him praise and honor and glory that reflects on him. And we're to be industrious for him, not idle, not lazy, not sitting around as women of leisure, concerned only for our own comfort and long lunches. That's not the picture. Maybe some of us have got kind of stuck in that, become too comfortable and idle and lazy when it comes to being Jesus' bride, his church, and we've stopped laboring hard and sacrificing for our husband and serving. But Jesus calls us to be industrious. We're to be other-centered. It's very easy, isn't it, particularly in these days as a church, to be inward-looking, to be only concerned with our own well-being, our kind of own members, maybe even smaller, just our own families. But the bride of Christ, according to Proverbs 31, is to be other-centered. We're to be concerned for the poor and for the city we live in. We're to be concerned for others within our church family. We're to speak wisdom and to speak words of kindness. We're to be other-centered. And we're to do so fearlessly and courageously, not fearful of the present or what the world can do to us, nor fearful of the future, what might be, but trusting in our Lord, our husband, and looking forward to hearing his praise for his bride. It's a high calling, but it's one he equips us to be able to live. Maybe you never thought of CCHH as being Christ's beautiful bride, or what that means for you as part of that bride. What it will look like to live as an excellent wife for him. See, are we as a church, as Proverbs 31 calls us to, bringing him honor and being a servant and delighting in doing so? How you been a servant in your marriage? How you been a servant as part of the church, Christ's bride? Proverbs 31 is a picture of the ordinary Christian life. It's a picture of servanthood, of serving the one we love.